What's up, folks? This is your host, Tony, here with Outfield Talk. Talking about some youth baseball today out back where the heart hits home, out in Hemet. I'm joined by two guys that I've basically looked up to my whole life as older brothers. Ricky Gingras is one of them. Great baseball player, got drafted by the Houston Astros. He's got that under his belt. And then Bryant Vega, who went on to play for the Carlsbad Bats in independent ball. Both of them, great baseball players, learned a lot from them. Bryant actually was my trainer for a little bit to get me ready to go play college ball. And on top of that, they're starting a new travel ball baseball program out in Southern California called Golden State Baseball. So we're just here to talk about that and the future of youth baseball just in general. So boys, go ahead and introduce yourselves. Right on, Bryant.
Captain owners, all those fun things. I represent the county of Riverside, which is one of the biggest counties in the nation. Riverside County All-Star for baseball as well as football. Captain owners of both sports. Obviously did the CIF portion of things. I was there. Very much a two-sport athlete growing up, and I believe in that because it makes you well-rounded. All right, I know that players growing up want to be multiple sports or whatever the case may be, maybe just focus on one. But for that portion actually helped build me up to go to Santa Ana, which I played for Don Stenton, the winningest coach in California for JC ball. From there, I transferred to Mount Santa Ana, where I played for Steve Alonso, professional coach for the Red Sox. Surrounded by professionals, again, won the Utility Player of the Year award there. Captain Honors, again, got my scholarship shortly after that to Colorado State Pueblo. I was also a utility player again. Started at third and right field. Went to go ahead and mixed it up to go play at Cal State San Bernardino, where actually I hit my 10 home runs, had a batting average, and that actually pushed me to the next level to go play in the independent leagues. I played in the Pecos League. I played New Mexico, Texas, Colorado, Southern Colorado, that portion of things. And I also coached, and because of that, I also went to the next level and coached the University of Cal State San Bernardino. As well as talk with, like Ricky was saying, I also joined Ricky on that staff, had a phenomenal staff filled with professional athletes, professional coaches. It was a great place to be.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, you boys both have big resumes, and if these kids are really lucky to have you. So next question is, what made you guys want to start this program? Why did you guys make Golden State Baseball?
We've been talking about it for years because the kids that we were getting in the systems just weren't ready. They weren't fundamentally sound. They weren't ready to go. They weren't prepared for varsity placement. We were looking at each other like, what is going on? What's going on with Douglas? You know, all these kids play travel ball. All these kids, their parents are paying thousands of dollars a year. So what, I mean, we play travel. Our parents paid thousands of dollars a year. They probably paid less because of the times, of what year it was, but we're looking at each other like, how are these kids so behind, but yet they're playing on these elite travel ball organizations, you know?
Some of these kids are getting robbed. They're getting robbed.
And so we kind of looked at each other like, you know what? We need to do something about this. There's a big problem going on, especially here in the Valley. Because you got to Marriott, Temecula, that area. And that's where supposedly the elite travel teams are. Okay, we're in the Hemet San Jacinto area, and there's not much. There's no one organization that has control of all the high schools, has control of all the travel ball organizations. It's kind of a scattered daddy ball kind of situation. Okay, so we looked at it, and we looked at each other. We're like, we need to do something. We need to step in. We need to get these kids ready to go, because, like, they're missing a big part of this, part of what's going on. They're not getting their money's worth. You know, we only play rec ball.
They have freshmen coming into the high school level that, at a for example, Anthony, you can relate to this because we had the same coaches growing up. They had freshmen coming in that don't understand the small things that me and you took for granted learning at 9 and 10 years old. So there was things that probably we took to, you know, for granted at a young age. We're seeing these young freshmen come in, and they're being treated as the stereotypical freshman because their mentality isn't there. The proper leads, the proper small things that everyone should have. We learned at 9 and 10 years old, these players are getting neglected of these things that are going to push them through to the next level. That's what Ricky was just talking about. We were finding things that, as far as our one-on-one lessons, because we work with kids on a regular basis, but we can build them up, but as far as the whole team standpoint, as far as how the whole team coming together, they weren't getting that team development. They weren't learning the intangibles that we had that we took for granted at a small age, and we realized it's a big issue. Now, going a step farther, with COVID, there isn't rec ball anymore. There isn't a rec ball system. But what is there? There is a ton of rec ball coaches. Those rec ball coaches now are starting organizations. They're starting teams. And that's fine. They're great guys. They're nice people. They have time. They can work with the kids. And they can build those kids up. But at the same time, if that coach only played till he was a junior in high school or a senior in high school, whatever the case may be.
That's what you're going to get. That's what you're paying for.
You're not going to get the guy that's going to get you the next level, because in all reality, that guy was never at the next level.
Right.
So it's really hard for that guy to know the intangibles that me and you learned at a small age. You know, 9 and 10 years old, 12 and 13 years old, that we probably took for granted. We can't teach that because they're with some rec ball coach. And those rec ball coaches now are affecting the high school programs. And that's what we're seeing, because we just came recently out of the high school programs. He's now recently the head coach of Mount San Jacinto Baseball as far as the pitching program, the head baseball pitching coach. For that round.
I'm the pitching coach.
But things like that, we're getting neglected, and that's why we're so passionate, because we're realizing now, at a small age, we were learning things at such a high level, we didn't even realize it until we see now, looking back, what these kids are learning. And we've decided to go ahead and cumulatively come together and start an organization that is going to go ahead and work for these kids. This is what they need. They need what me and you had at a young age. Because look where it took our careers. It took us to a great level to where we can now give back. And that's what we want to do. We want to give back to the organization and the community that took care of us. We want to focus on the community. That's why we're limited right in here. We made our whole circle right in here. And we're very, very excited, the community outreach, to make it happen.
Right. I mean, I totally agree with you. I mean, I'm a prime example growing up. And you're having your dad as my coach. I mean, I used to be one of those kids that couldn't hit a baseball, save my life. And then after working with your dad through the travel ball program, that's what really escalated me and my level of play, just because of how practices were run. And I know that you guys will run it the same way. A lot of repetitions, everything's going boom, 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 no time to rest. I know that's what you boys want to do, right? Like that kind of practice style where you're always on your feet moving.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard nose, like there's no time wasted.
Yep.
You know, everybody's moving. Everyone has somewhere to be. Everyone's getting the reps they need. Everyone's getting the, more importantly, everyone's getting the instruction they need. Okay, so we have multiple coaches on the field always. We always have multiple coaches on the field at one time, working with, you know, a moderate group of players. We're not going to go out there with 100 players and two coaches, three coaches, or even worse. I've seen some teams go out there with 30 guys and one coach.
Yep.
How brutal is that? You know, so one kid's taking a ground ball and 29 are standing around.
Yep, and that's the problem that I ran into. That actually reminds me of how I have to coach my summer camp. It's the same thing. I'm given 30 kids for a session, and you only have two coaches to work with. It's not enough people to get everyone moving around. Everyone's standing around. There's a lot of standing around.
Right.
You can't do it that way. You have to keep the kids interested, motivated, moving constantly. That's the only way you're going to see progress.
You know, ultimately, what we want is three guys hitting fungos and a guy being a rover. The rover moves around with all the infield spots, or even two rovers. So we're working with each infielder. Here's what you should do. Hey, great job. Instead of doing that, filling it straight up, and trying to get around it, let's try the backhand, sit on the back feet, work through first base, things like that. You know, working on those small, minute details that they don't necessarily get coached up on when there's just one coach out there, or even two coaches.
Yeah. I totally, completely agree with you guys, but let's move on. So every coach has a different philosophy that they believe in. This is what I want to do with my players from here on out. So what's your guys' coaching philosophies? Like, where do you guys see yourselves as mentors to these young kids that you're trying to recruit?
As far as my philosophy, I'm going to go to age group because it's kind of an open range question. I'm going to go to age group. My favorite age group to work with is 10-year-olds. 10, 11, possibly 12, but I prefer to keep it younger. My reason being, back to the fundamentals portion of it, like you brought up, I want to have these young kids in my practice environment, in my instructional environment, because if you can reach them at an early age, you could potentially stop thousands of bad, you know, mechanics, bad reps, bad, you know, just a bad habit altogether. Because we've been at the high school level, we've coached the university level myself. As soon as you get to that level, when you're 16, 15 years old, you've done something hundreds of thousands of times, millions of times, billions of times, a certain way. It makes it extremely hard for the muscle memory to bounce over to the proper portion, the proper way to do things. So that being said, I want to go ahead and focus on the fundamentals. That's the cliche thing that every coach says. But if you learn it the right way, I truly do believe if you have proper coaches at the right age group, at the right time, and you're willing to learn, things will flourish for that player. But you have to be open-minded and you have to be willing to work. As soon as you work with a good coach like we had at a young age, your game will grow exponentially within a year. But you have to keep that mindset, though. The reps I put in this month, I'm not going to see this month right away. I'm going to see it next month. And that goes for if I have a bad month, if there's rain or bad weather, whatever the case is, and we get wiped out for a couple weeks. Well, at the same time, after those couple weeks, I'm not expecting my defense to be hot. I'm not expecting my hitters to have the proper timing because we haven't had the work. So if you go ahead and you buy into a program, you find a coach that you really believe in, and he pushes that message, you're going to find those results. But you're going to find those results a month down the road, 4 weeks down the road, 6 weeks down the road. Those results are coming. But don't expect them overnight. And that's my philosophy. we're going to work and we're going to get every single drop out of every single player. But at the same time, it takes the parents, the family, everyone. They have to join in and buy into our program. And once they do, they will see the results at the end of the road. That is my philosophy.
I agree. I'll add on to that then. So you like working with the younger kids. Do you see yourself starting with this first core group that you guys are going to be working with and then working with them throughout? Like as they get older, like you'll still be around. Like it's not going to be like other travel ball programs where it's just, hey, you have this coach when you're 10 years old, this when you're 12, this when you're 14 kind of deal.
We would love the long haul. All right, you know as well as I do, let's just use ourselves as a freshman in college, which we've all been. They instill in you, it's the long road. All right, it isn't the short-term ride. Just because you're not in the desired position you plan on being as a freshman when you get recruited in, doesn't mean that's not where you're going to be as a sophomore or a junior. You got to work for it, and they instill it in you on day one, and they have a talk with you. But at the same time, we don't need to go ahead and push and push and push to make those things happen. As long as you buy into the program and you really believe in it and you work hard, those reps are there, you will see the results in the long run. That's how we feel.
Perfect. Couldn't agree more. Ricky, what's your philosophy?
Well, I agree with Brian 100%. You know, I mean, you take a young kid or a young teen, for that matter, and you put them through our system when they're 9 years old. And we at that age, we're looking at the basic fundamentals, very basic fundamentals. Footwork, you know, how to throw, how to hit your cut, where to line up on the cut.
Even just how to take a proper, like a basic lead.
Exactly. I was just about to say.
A lot of players, as a freshman, don't know how to take a proper lead. They don't know how to do it.
Exactly. So we get it. We don't just teach them. We ingrain it. It's ingrained in their mind. Like from Coach Hunter, his dad, and my dad, your dad, even my whole career. These things are ingrained in my head. I can't forget them. You know what I mean? I cannot forget them. That's how I play baseball.
No, yeah, exactly. I mean, everything that Bryant's dad taught me growing up, I took that with me to college, and right. That's just...
I literally can't do anything different. And that's how it should be, because those are the fundamentals of baseball. Okay. So at that youngest level, the 10U or 9U or what have you, that's what we ingrain in them. That's what we teach them about the game of baseball. So when they get to 12U, now we can start building on them. When they get to 14U, we get them ready for high school ball. When they become high schoolers, we get them ready for varsity ball. When they hit late high school ball, we get them ready for college ball. We attack showcases.
Mm-hmm.
Showcase, try and get them scholarships. And our main objective is to make every college, or I'm sorry, get every player in the college through baseball.
Me personally, I would love to reach every player to where I can make connection with them. And when they go into high school, they're not considered the high school player. They're not considered the freshman label, you know, the entry high school kid. That is my goal. I'm not going to have the best athletes in the world. I know that. I'm not going to have 6'5 giants come into my program. I'm not going to have guys throwing 90-plus. I understand that. But we're going to build their mentalities. We're going to build their bodies to the best that they're capable of building. And we're going to give them the best opportunity they can to go to the next level. That is our goal. Our freshmen coming to high school are not going to be considered the freshman mentality. They're going to already be exposed to a high level of ball, and they're going to be ready to take it on. They're going to be accepting of the challenge, and they're going to be excited to be challenged. That is my goal. That is Ricky's goal. We've talked about it multiple times. We know that we can offer that to these kids, and that's our plan.
Right. So that was actually my next question is what makes your guys' program stand out from other programs? Like, I know programs growing up, when I was younger, they – recruit the best of the best, like all these rich, fancy travel ball teams, they only recruited the best kids that would play. And then our travel ball team, we started when we were, I think, 11, 12 years old, and we worked all the way up. And then finally, when we got to that late stage, that's where things started taking off. And people were being like, these guys can freaking play, you know? So what stands out different from your guys' program than anyone else's?
There's one key word that you said, and that has been within our group, that has been talked about a lot within our dads, within the planning for this program. And the key word there, I guess it's two key words. It's rich kids. Okay. Only the rich families can afford the best coaching, the best facility uses, the best fields, and, you know, whatever that comes with. Okay. We're trying to make this affordable. And to make it affordable, we have certain outlets that we've relied on. Okay. But to make it different, to go a step further, we have more coaches on the field even than they do.
And we're back. I just want to add on to what Bryant talked about earlier, people not getting enough reps. And that kind of has to do with something that Bryant brought up earlier. Kids that play multiple sports. And I'm on the fence because, playing in North Dakota, everyone was a three-sport athlete. And then now coaching out here in New Hampshire, everybody's a three-sport athlete. But that kind of interferes with what you guys are trying to talk about, right? Taking 300, 400 swings a day to try and improve yourself if you really are a dedicated baseball player. But you can also be a really great football player. Like one of my players on the varsity team was an amazing football and baseball player, but he loved baseball. But you know as well as I do, you can't play travel ball or anything else besides the sport that you're playing based on NFHS rules. You have to be strictly doing that sport. You can't do anything else. So how does that tie in with the travel ball program with you guys? Like, would you like, I know you're probably more open to kids playing multiple sports, Bryant, because, and Ricky, you too, you played football too in high school, didn't you?
No, I never played football, but I played basketball.
Okay, yeah.
Up through middle school. However, I'll tell you this, I always knew baseball was my sport. So even there in basketball season, I was still working after baseball. You know, after basketball practice, I was still getting my 100 swings in a day. You know what I mean? Like, I was still working my throwdowns to second. I was still taking my ground balls. I was still throwing my bullpens. That's the key to it as far as baseball. I think you're correct in the wording that baseball is a year-round sport. But yeah, you can play your other sports, but you still have to put in the time for baseball while you're playing the sports. And I think Bryant can really elaborate that on that. He did it at the high school level.
He said it perfect. He said it perfect. What I personally believe, and I know it worked for myself, you find a swing that matches every player. You have to find a swing that matches the ball player. All right, their body, their biomechanics, however their swing works, it's only going to work one way. It's not going to work the same for every single person. But at the same time, when you find that swing and you find that proper motion that works for your body, you have to remember it. You have to work it out. You have to keep the muscle memory hot. I remember several mornings when I was in high school playing those Friday night games, I played 100% full-time football. I was still hitting Saturday mornings with a stiff neck, sore back. I still hit those Saturday mornings and Sundays just to make sure I didn't forget my swing. Now, was I hitting Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday? Honestly, I wasn't. I tried to make some swings when I could, but I did the most amount of reps I could in that time period so I would not forget my swing. And that goes a step farther because I was also a pitcher. I was also a quarterback as well, so that actually worked out with my throwing program. At the same time, I made sure I still got my one bullpen, two bullpens a week, just because I did not want to lose the muscle memory. So to be a dual athlete, it takes a lot of work to do it successfully. And I put the work in. We had the same exact coaches. They instilled that work ethic in us. They made us work to that level. And they also told us muscle memory is key to get to the next level, to keep you consistent. The name of the game is consistency. Everyone wants to talk about the word consistency. But in order to be consistent, you have to have the same swing, the same release point, the same stride, the same landing point. Everything has to be the same every single time. Playing football, playing baseball is what I did. Actually, my freshman year, I played basketball as well. I was a triathlete my freshman year. And what I found out is my freshman year, when I played basketball, and I went straight into baseball, I lost 10 to 12 pounds that I couldn't really afford to lose because there's so much cardio involved to be a triathlete, especially in basketball. So at that point in time, I had to make somewhat of a decision, and my decision was to go 100% into football, 100% into baseball. I had offers out of football and offers in baseball, but because I actually put the time in. All right, the hardest thing an athlete can do themselves, if they're going to be a dual athlete, is they're going to take that time off and not touch the bat, not touch the ball. They're not going to take any ground balls. They're not going to take any fly balls. So when you come out in January, and keep in mind, a lot of these high schools, they have tryouts. And in November, December-ish, or beginning of January, these high schools is when they have their tryouts. Football season just ended. How can you expect yourself to be in shape to go ahead and put on a good show with the bat when you haven't touched a bat in 3, 4, 5 months? 7-on-7 football starts in the summer. Baseball is still going in the summer with your high school team. I did both. I played baseball games throughout the entire summer with my high school team, as well as going to 7-on-7 tournaments and going to the weight room for the high school team. It's a big, big commitment. If you buy in, though, if you really buy into the whole scheme of things, you will be bigger and stronger than those other athletes, I personally believe, those baseball boys. You will come out in January bigger, stronger, and faster than probably a lot of those baseball boys. But at the same time, they have taken thousands of ground balls. They have taken thousands of fly balls while you were working and lowering the pads. So if you want to be a dual athlete, it is very, very open to do. And I'm open-minded to those dual athletes. But at the same time, muscle memory is a big key to the game. We cannot afford to be a dual athlete successfully. If you're going to put that bat down for 3 or 4 months, 5 months, you're going to pick it up in January, and guess what? You're going to forget your swing. You're going to forget where you were the last season and go on to the pitching portion. Your release point is going to change. Your landing is going to change. Your timing is going to change. You're going to be a different boy. And let's add another factor to it. Okay, we're talking about high school boys now. Let's just say puberty hits. And all of a sudden, in the course of one summer, I'm 3 inches taller and I'm a few seconds faster. That's going to change the player development altogether. But if I'm not learning my new landing now because I'm 3 inches taller, if I'm not learning my new landing because I'm 20 pounds heavier because of proper weight management,
yep,
I'm going to go ahead and be left behind because I'm going to grab that bat in 4 months. And I'm not going to be able to hit anything. I'm not going to be able to ball fatigue. It's just how it works. It's a muscle memory game, and it takes a lot of work to do. Now, I am a big fan of dual athletes, like you said. Like you brought it up, I'm a big fan of dual athletes. But at the same time, being a dual athlete, it takes a lot of work. And then you go to the other end of it. You got to be a good student.
Yep.
If you're not a good student, you're wasting your time. If you're going to go ahead and neglect that other part of it, as far as the academics, it has no bearing then on how hard you work as far as physical, because if you can't get into college, it doesn't matter. You can't neglect the other portion of it either. You have three legs right there to be a good dual athlete, and it's all based on muscle memory and all based on academics, academics being the number one.
Right, and I'll add on to that, because academics is a good point in what you guys, I'm sure you're bringing to the program too. Me, I went to college my sophomore year. I broke my college's hitting record, and then after that, it was party central for me coming into my junior year, and then had a great fall season. Screwed up with my grades, and I sat out my whole junior spring season, which sucked. And I ended up taking that to my high school where I'm at now, coaching. And I have a couple kids that are struggling with grades. I'm like, dude, like, you got to get on track with your grades. Trust me, it'll be the worst mistake of your life. Here's why. Here's what I had to go through. All the hell, your friends are making fun of you because you should be out there playing, especially if you're one of the better players on the team. Like, they feel like they let you down. They're going to let you hear about it. And so, yeah, grades is really important to me as a coach now, just because I had to go through that stuff through college. And it was the worst, like, 4 or 5 months of my life. So I'm really just hoping that grades is really important to you guys. You're pushing that. Like, I don't know if you guys will be looking for grade checks or whatever, but are you guys pushing, like, academics on them more importantly?
I'm gonna elaborate on that. Our main objective for these high school boys, we want to go to showcases. We want to show these guys talents. We want to give them opportunities to get out of town, to get them to a bigger and better level, a bigger platform than me and you obviously haven't been to. But they went to the same platform as us. That is great, because you know what? We played at a very competitive level. Our goal, though, is to push them farther than we went. That is my goal, okay? Now, moving forward, though, if they don't have the grades to get to the very smallest level, how can I even push them to another coach, to a university, when a recruit comes to me? If a recruiter says, hey, how is your boy? I'm not going to tell him the first numbers of 90 miles an hour or his 60 was below a 6.9. I'm not going to tell him those things. The first things that come out of my mouth is their GPA. Are they actually acceptable into your university? Because they have a standard.
Yep.
That's the first thing they're going to ask me too, more than likely. They're not going to ask, hey, how is he? How is his demeanor? Or how is his personality? No, it has nothing to do with that. The first thing they're going to ask me is academics. Are they potentially even eligible to get into my university? And then secondary, let's talk about his miles per hour. Let's talk about his speed time. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about that. Those are all the extras. But the very first question they're always going to ask us is, hey, do they have the academics? Do they have discipline to stay at our level?
Yeah, I feel like that's what it always is. I mean, you can have the stats for days that will draw the college coaches there, or the actually, yeah, just college coaches. MLB, it doesn't mess with GPA. But the college coaches would be drawn, oh my God, this guy's hitting 420 in a hard league. Like, he's playing D1 California baseball, and he's hitting 420. Like, but if his grades are crap, they ain't gonna matter. They're just gonna be like, he's gonna flunk out once we get him in here, regardless of how bad we want him.
Yeah, with Massanutten, you know, we're just a junior college. Okay, so if you have your diploma, you can get in. Okay, you're in. Okay, but, you know, we look at grades in the standpoint from how responsible you are. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So, you know what I mean? Like, is this a kid we can rely on to do little things? Or is this guy a 1.5 GPA, 2.0 GPA through high school? We have to babysit. And trust me, college coaches don't want to be babysitters. High school coaches don't want to be babysitters.
Sir.
You on your homework. We don't want to send you to study hall. And we have study hall at our college, at Madison Center College. But we don't want to babysit them, because the easiest, like just like you said, man, the easiest way for a kid to get turned down is grades. And we've all seen it. The most talented kid in the world. The most talented kid in the world, we've all seen it. Doesn't have the grades. What a story. We've read it 100 times. Let's break that narrative. let's make the most talented kid out there have the 4.0, have the 4.5. Let's make him valedictorian. You know, that's what we're looking for in our program. And it's a kid with good grades, good athlete, good kid all around. You know, does all the right things. But the GPA thing, man, it hit me hard too. It hit me hard too because when I was in junior college, you know, I was getting recruited by D1s. And even in high school, I was being recruited by major D1s, SEC D1s, LSU, you know, Ole Miss. I was being recruited by Texas, Long Beach State, Northridge, Oregon, UCLA, USC, these big-time schools, San Diego State, USD. And coming out of junior college, I actually got an offer from the University of San Diego. They gave me the offer and we committed. And it was the number one recruiting class in the nation at the time. And the biggest name on that list was Chris Bryant. And we committed there and we sent our transcripts in and qualified. Did not qualify for University of San Diego. That sucked. That really sucked. You know, it was hard to go through. It was kind of because of my grades. You know, I failed a couple classes in junior college. And at the time, it was the recession of 08, 09, 010. And community colleges in California weren't offering summer school, so I couldn't make up those classes to get into USD. So what I was left with was NAI ball. Luckily, I got with a good program, Point Loma Nazarene University, which is now a D2. But, you know, I could have been playing at a major D1, instead of playing at a pretty good NAI, you know. Those grades are important, big time.
That's something I never knew you played NAI ball, just like me. I had no idea that me and you both played NAI ball. That's kind of cool. So you boys, the way travel ball works, you want to get these boys to the showcases and all that. COVID is still around. How's that going to affect, like, your guys' playing? Like, I don't know what it's like in California right now. Like, my high school finally just got approved to play. And my state has been allowing people to play. I coach out in Maine. How's this going to affect you guys? Are you guys going to be able to actually play tournaments in California? Or do you think you're going to have to actually, like, travel to, like, Arizona or something, a state that's more, like, relaxed with the COVID regulations?
All right, well, me and Ricky both, we do lessons, and my primary job at this point in time is actually one-on-one lessons, one-on-one instruction in softball and baseball. And one of the things I heard was a lot of my boys and girls are going out of state to play with the California team against California teams. That doesn't make sense.
Right.
Spending a lot of money to go out of state to play someone that's in our backyard. It does not make sense. So as a new organization and us starting up, we're definitely going to do the whole cliche answer and we're going to build fundamentals. But when we talk about fundamentals, though, we're definitely going to instill work ethic. We're going to instill these small things, these little things that we learned and took for granted as a small age. Anthony, you can relate to. We're going to go ahead and move forward and not go ahead and go to these out-of-state tournaments when we can stay right here in Southern California, which Southern California is opening up slowly. And when I say slowly, we're already having scrimmages now. As far as the big tournaments, as far as rings and things of that nature, they are having tournaments with rings and they're having tournaments with medals, but that's not what we're after. Okay, we're not trying to go ahead and build a team to just put some rings on our fingers. That's not our goal. Our goal is to build these players up and build them up to a potential that we can have them successfully go to these tournaments, go to these showcases. You know, the long-term goal, these showcases that you can relate to as a player, to showcase these boys, to showcase their talents, get them out of town, get them some money, get them some schooling paid for. That is the goal. But we're not going to do that by spending money immediately to go out of the state when we're in Southern California. Southern California is one of the meccas of baseball. Arizona, Florida, Texas, all these states by the equator Those are meccas of baseball. We're going to use that to build our players because there is so many players down here. I don't feel the need to go out of state to play the own guy, to play these teams right here in our own backyard. It doesn't make sense. We are very fortunate to have our own fields. We're very fortunate to have our own fields that we have scrimmages on. And that's our mindset moving forward. We'd rather have scrimmages to push our message to these boys before we go to these big showcases. We don't want to surprise them with something they haven't seen before. All right, with these showcases, yeah, they are 100% ran professionally. They want to see the sprint time. They want to see the hitters. They want to see the pitchers. But you have to build that engine at a small age. And that's what we plan on doing. We want to start young, like I said. And we want to build these engines all the way up. So we're ready for those showcases. We're 100% ready for those showcases. The communication is there. The players are there. The work ethic has been there. They're ready to roll. And that's kind of our mindset. We've talked about it multiple times. And that's where we're going to move forward on.
Right. I guess I should have worded it more clearly. I'm talking like just regular like tournaments. Is there tournaments being held in California and stuff like that? Or will you have to go out to like, let's say.
As of right now, there is not a lot of tournaments. There is a few tournaments. They're spread out sporadically. But as of right now, yeah, a lot of people are going out of state. And that's not what we're trying to do right now. We're trying to build internally before we go ahead and push ourselves to that level. By the time I believe that we're done building ourselves internally, there will be a ton of tournaments, a ton of extra scrimmages, things of that nature, built in our own backyard that we don't need to go out of state. So, yeah, we are working on a small time frame. Like I said, the reps that we put in today, don't expect to see them next week. We're expecting to see them in a month. So a couple months from now, when we build these teams up, we build these boys up, then we're open-minded to possibly go to these bigger tournaments, but I'm expecting these bigger tournaments around April to be in our own backyards again.
I mean, I'd love nothing more than for everything to be back opened up and just everyone playing everywhere. I mean, I was so relieved hearing this year that I'd be coaching this year again. I missed my boys so much. They come and visit me at the store that I work at, and all we talk about is baseball for a little bit, talk about life, and they're just we're going to be back on the field. Yeah, we should start practice, or our first meeting should be at the end of February, and then usually like mid-March, that's when the snow starts to melt. It's been a really weird winter here. It's been a warm winter. We were supposed to get like a super bad winter this year, but it hasn't happened yet. I mean, fingers crossed, but.
This is our first like bad rain today of our track. So.
Yeah. So let's go into that. You guys got to see the 10 U guys at least try out at least, right?
Yeah, we got a 12 U and 10 U, and you know, we were impressed. We got some very good players coming out. You know, I think one of the reasons we drew them in was because of some of the videos we released on social media. And what it did is it kind of explained our philosophy. And our philosophy is, you know, there's multiple coaches on each field. You know, we're getting... Each kid is getting multiple reps with a coach right behind him. Okay. When you go to these other travel ball practices, it's one coach hitting a 30.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The travel ball programs that I was talking about where it's just like specialized is these two coaches are in charge of this team and these two are here. Exactly. You guys are different. They all practice together.
Right.
So you have the younger kids seeing what the older kids are doing now,
right?
And giving them the wow factor of like, God, man, I can freaking do that. Like someday, I'm gonna get to that point if I stick the course.
Exactly. And so with the tryouts, you know, we had a good group of the 12U and 10U players, but what they saw was that. We had six coaches on the field. Six coaches just for the tryout. So not one player was left behind. Everybody's instructing, everybody's taking track. The whole thing was organized. And then unfortunately, the rain hit a little too hard. And so the facility we were using asked us if we could step off the field for the time being. And so we had to cut it a little short, but.
I'm gonna touch on that though. All right, one of the words that we're gonna use with these boys is adversity. Adversity means there's things out of our control. They're going to go ahead and obstruct us. There's things like roadblocks. There's things to be in our way. Golden State baseball just faced their first hair of adversity. All right. And it happened to be the weather. And that's fine because adversity is a part of the game. Adversity is a part of life. We're going to teach these kids that adversity isn't something to be scared of. It's a challenge. Okay, adversity is something that's going to happen on an everyday basis. It might be small, it might be big, it might be massive, but we all face adversity at a regular time. But we're going to relate it to baseball for these young players. All right, the game of baseball, you lose 7 out of 10 times, but you're great.
Yep, game of life, baby.
All right, 7 out of 10 times, but you're great. Adversity comes in. You're not feeling great. You're a little sick. You have a small injury. You have a small this. There is always little hindrances. There's always things going to hold you back. Adversity is a word that we're going to use a lot. And Golden State baseball today faced a hair of adversity. It's exactly what it did. But you know what? It's not going to hold us back. We've already done our work. We've been working. We've been pushing. We have a message that is sent out to these players and sent out to these parents, and they're receiving it. And you know what? And it is a message that's going to be instilled in these players in the long term. If they buy into the program, they work with us, it's going to go a long way. And that's exactly what we're pushing. Adversity isn't something to be scared of. It's a challenge. And that's what adversity happened today, right?
100%. You know, we all kind of called it quits when we saw the radar last night. But what we really wanted to do was get these kids on the field. We knew it's been a long time for them. Yep. We knew they were excited to just get the gloves on and honestly just play catch. We didn't get one of them to see what it's like to get some practice in and feel good with their buddies, hit some BP, go through some ground balls. And even throw the home plate, let their arms fly, see how it's going, go through the whole stretch routine. You know, everything was
there's a sense of normalcy. And the kids appreciated it. They want this structure. Even though they're not gonna admit it, they want structure. They want to be told, hey, this is how to be progressive, this is how you're gonna be a positive player, and this is how you're gonna be a positive teammate. That's the biggest issue. That's gonna be the biggest message we can give to them is a positive teammate. If we push that message to where we all bind together and we all work through adversity, the same exact word I'm gonna relate to them, adversity. If we all work together through adversity, these speed bumps are just that. They're just speed bumps. And today, Golden State Baseball, they faced their first speed bump. As an organization, that was our first speed bump. And you know what? We're gonna progress through it. A little rain's not going to hold us down. We're going to progress through. We're going to have that long-term mindset that we're going to instill in every single player and every single parent. If they buy into the program, like I said, the work you do today, you're not going to see tomorrow. You're going to see that work a month from now. And then a month from now, give us 6 months from now. 6 months from now, a year from now, and you won't even recognize that boy anymore.
All right, then. Dude, you said it perfectly. I mean, it's a lot of hard work. You got to battle through adversity. We're going to have to take another pause here, though. Again, I mean, time flies when you're having fun. We're at our 30-minute mark here. So we're just going to take another quick pause here. We're back again. So how's the community received you guys? I know that you guys have done a lot of social media posting. You've had a lot of other people do social media posting. You even asked Ron Savage, the head coach of Tockwitz, to put out a statement on, and you guys put that on social media, and he's one of the big figures in our hometown because he coaches at one of the best high schools in Hemet. I mean, so how's the community reached out to you guys or embraced you, basically?
Honestly, I'm extremely thrilled. We have had, you know, like I said, the word adversity with COVID and things going on. We're a little hesitant at first, but I'm extremely thrilled at the fact that the community has been more than I've ever hoped for. Ron Savage, Stephen Brown, and other high school coaches in our area are actually 100% on board with our message. They are reaching out to their players. They're pushing their players in their organization. They're pushing their players the same exact message that we can relay, and they're helping us progress as far as we can go. And I'm super thrilled with other parents that are not even in the high school organization, that are the younger age. We're talking about businesses. We're talking about younger people that have not ever played actually somewhat travel ball, 10-year-olds, 9-year-olds. They're reaching out and they're asking questions, and they're super thrilled to be a part of something that's bigger than they've ever seen as far as what we've offered in, you know, Hemet, California. A lot of it's been this whole daddy ball system or one coach hitting ground balls and 9 guys. They're very thrilled to be able to say, hey, I can comfortably put my name with a couple guys that know they can take care of their kids. I'm thrilled with the community right now. The community has been more than I've ever expected as far as their outreach. And it's gone to the point to where we're super excited that this is going to be not just something that can reach our small community. It can reach out to other communities in our neighboring communities. We can help multiple kids in other areas to get to their goals and get to their, you know, their ultimate objectives. We are thrilled with where we're at right now, and I cannot wait to 100% let this rain stop and get started, because we have a lot of kids, those mindsets, that want to work with us. I can't wait to start.
Right, and then you guys have even received a couple donations here and there. I mean, just you guys just started up, and people obviously believe in both of you guys enough to raise today's youth and work through them. I mean, I made a donation just because, like I said, you guys, my older brothers, man. I mean, I respect you enough. I know that what the coaching system is going to be. So that's why I went ahead and made my donation. So it's really cool that you guys even have donations coming in, and you guys haven't even had a first practice yet. You're trying out right now.
The best part about it is the fact that you're on the East Coast and you understand our message. Like, our message is already reaching areas that we never thought were possible. Okay, but that's who we are, and it's never going to change. It's an instilled work ethic that we learned at a young age, and me and you can totally relate to that, because at a young age, we had the very same coaches. We're giving it back now. We're 100% invested in these kids, and that is what our goal is. And the fact that the community is relating to us, it's more than I could ever ask for, being honest with you, Anthony. I am so thrilled. Yes, this weather's coming in and it's kind of pouring us down and it's kind of holding us down. But you know what? This weather isn't going to hold down Golden State baseball, because exactly what you just said, that message, we're going to move forward with it. And it's going to be not just a message. It's going to be a part of who you are. And that's exactly what we're going to do. I'm thrilled with the community outreach. I'm thrilled that everyone is helping us. At this point in time, I feel that there isn't a little storm that can stop us.
Exactly. You couldn't ask for a better support group. You know, we got it, it almost feels like we've got the whole town behind us. You know, from the older guys that we know from meeting around town and that have coached us, and now our parents that grew up in this town as well, they all have our backs. We've all talked to them. They're all supporting the organization. They're sharing our posts. They're reaching out to people that they haven't reached out to in years. And they believe in us, and we can't thank them enough for their support.
Yeah, I mean, what more can you ask for? I mean, you guys are pretty much local celebrities in town anyways, but especially with how you guys performed on the baseball field, for sure. So it really comes as no surprise of all the support that you guys are getting. I really cannot stress it enough how happy I am for you guys and wanting to start this program, especially after I just got out of the program, instilled by mine and Bryant's dad, which is pretty much, VBA Hornets. It was the same system. We started when we were 11, 12, worked all the way up to when we were 18. And I'm pretty sure like 80
boys from VBA scholarship.
I'm pretty sure 80% of us went on to play scholarship. And then a lot of them, you say higher, it could be 90. I mean, Michael.
11 boys scholarship from that team.
Out of.
Boys scholarship from VBA?
Yeah, out of like the 15 that was on the roster. And then, and some of them even moved on to play pro careers. I mean, Matt Orzik, he's long snapping. He was long snapping for the Jaguars, and I think last I checked, he's with the Titans now.
Yeah, you're totally right.
Yep, baseball wasn't his path. He's a really good baseball player, but he was also a really good football player. This goes in with dual athletes.
Dual athlete again, like we're talking about.
Yep, he got looks to play baseball and football, took the football route, and now he's in the NFL. I mean, I still talk to him every once in a while. I've been trying to get him on. We just haven't lined up a schedule yet. He's busy. I mean, I understand. But like you said, like 90% of us went on to play college baseball and got to experience that next level based on the same philosophies that you guys are trying to instill on these kids that you're going to be coaching now.
The amazing part, though, about your team is I'm going to say 85% of them stayed together since age, 10, 11?
Yeah, 10, 11, 12, somewhere in that range. It was middle school, so probably like 11, 12.
Stayed together throughout the whole process, and you bought into the program. When you bought in that program, yes, there were some ups and downs initially. But as soon as you guys took your lumps and bumps, you started handing them out 2 years later.
Yep. I mean,
later, you guys were handing out those lumps and bumps to the other teams, but you bought into the program. And the biggest part was you stayed together. One of the problems and one of the issues I have with a lot of club ballers right now, when I meet a 10 or 11 year old and he's already been on three different teams, you're been on three different teams. Anthony, how can I relate to you and how can you relate to me? Because we bought into a program that was properly structured and 100% ready to rock. But they did something that was not obviously up to our scale because they didn't buy in. And now I find a kid that's on three or four different teams. We bought into a program at a young age and look at the scholarship rate. You said it's 90%. That is amazing. For a bunch of boys to stay together throughout the whole process and working together, 90% is amazing. That's not just 90% varsity high school players. That's 90% boys going to college, getting paid to go to college, paid for their education. That is heavy. That is big words.
Well, when you think about it, with the bigger groups, I don't want to mention any names. There's some major organizations here in Southern California.
I'll drop one. Bombers. Go on.
Well, some of these kids got 400 kids at the same graduating class. They're that big,
right?
And they got 20 kids going on scholarship. So what is that? 5%.
Partner. Yeah.
Yeah.
Easy to brag about, though. Hey.
They're going to brag about it big time. It's all over the
college, 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 but it's only 5%.
We've had 90%.
Yep.
VBA is our business model, and VBA is 90%. You can't fight that.
No.
The numbers are there, and hey, if someone wants to question us, look all those boys up online because guess what? They're all there.
Yep.
They're all online. They're all in their college team. And guess what? They're all paid to be there.
And the
story I'm pulling out of my tail.
And the college stats will back it up. It's just they performed in college too, you know.
Right, look where you're at. Hell, yeah. You're one of our you're one of the VBA, you know, proto boys. You're the best. You're one of the guys at the top.
If you're set up to be a guy at the varsity level, I mean a guy, you're a guy at the varsity level. You're going to be a guy at the college level.
I don't think I would originally. I honestly never thought that I would be, because I got looked at to play varsity my freshman year, and honestly, I never thought I would have been like a star player, because I literally was one of those guys that could not touch a baseball to save my life, and I was throwing the wrong way, and then after working with my coach, I mean, everything worked out. I was able to pitch in college. I was able to break records in college, and honestly, I was a standout player in high school because of this, because I was playing baseball year round with that philosophy. It was reps, 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 water break, reps, 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 water break. You just repeat, repeat, repeat. And then once you get to that level, they're just like, dude, I got nothing else to teach you. You're knocking it out. Like, I don't understand. Like, how are you like this? I mean, look at me. When I went into college, I was 145. I was a string bean, but I could still out hit and outrun, you know, like 70-80% of the team because of that. And that, again, that goes with Bryant being my trainer with the speed training and all that. Like, I never thought I was going to be one of the faster guys, but, you know, ended up stealing bases because I learned how to take proper lead. You know, how a pitcher tells a pitch when he's actually going to go, whether he's a shoulder guy or he's a knee guy or leans. All that is literally from playing travel ball. Like, I would never have learned that in rec ball.
You would have never
learned that on other organizations. Yeah.
These other organizations, we just came from another organization, a bigger organization. They did not even
We were paid instructors a few months ago for a team, and I get paid to go instruct on teams. That's fine. That's part of my job. My job is one-on-one instruction as far as lessons, and Ricky is one-on-one instructions as well. But at the same time, we get paid to go do team instructions, okay? What we're finding on these teams that are hiring us, they're neglecting so many small things that me and you took for granted growing up. Like, we're getting paid to do things that is almost considered babysitting for me and you now.
Basic.
You're at the high school level, so you totally get it. But it's almost babysitting now because, my goodness, how did they not learn these small things that me and you took for granted? And it blows my mind. And that's the big ultimate reason why we started the organization. This is a big neglect on the fundamentals, and I know it's a cliche answer, but it's the truth.
Right, and then you're gonna have those parents of, you know, my kid was an all-star back in rec league, and he's so good, and then he shows up, and you're just like, he doesn't even know, like, drop step, head flip,
right,
crossover. Like, I'm over here teaching him like how to field a fly ball, but he was an all-star, like. Come on, man.
My son's on the majors. My son's in double A.
Let me ask you, in your opinion, Anthony, I mean, you're a little bit younger than us, but rec ball is about done, right? Would you agree with that? Rec ball is done.
Yeah, there's... Honestly, with how advanced travel ball has gotten, I think rec ball is just over. That's just, hey, my kid's 5 years old. I just want to watch him play baseball for a little bit. And then if he likes it, then you're just like, I'm wasting my time with rec ball. Like,
yeah.
I want him to move on. We're playing travel ball from here on out. So that's when parents will dish out the money.
Exactly. So... Do you think the players have improved at all?
That's a little complicated for me because, like I said, I coach out in Maine where everyone's, you know, three sport athlete. I'm dealing with a class size. It's like 200, 300 kids. So everyone's playing every other different sport. So it's a little bit hard for me to gauge, but if I was living back in California, I think it would be the same way, because even when I was in high school, a lot of kids were specialized. Like, it was honestly frowned upon when I was in high school if you were a dual sport athlete, because you either had to play one or the other, and literally your only out was to play like rec ball, because that was the only time you could play besides focusing on your other sport, and your coaches wouldn't be mad at you. They'd just be like, oh, he's just fooling around on the field. But now, with how travel ball's gotten and how big it's gotten and how parents have seen, oh my gosh, if I focus this kid on this circuit for so long, there is a chance that they can move up and get a degree from this. Rec ball's not going to do it. You have to have these advanced coaches teaching your kids the right way to play the game in a more aggressive style, especially when you guys go into tournaments. Like, Arizona Fall Classic was always like my favorite time to play travel ball games, because that's when we play guys across the nation. I played against teams against Maryland, New York, Arizona, anywhere, Hawaii even. Played kids all over there, and it was literally just balls to the wall. Everybody's competing. You can't beat that. You're not going to get that in rec ball. It's just going to be like, hey, Johnny, let's go. Like, no.
That's the difference. Like, when me and Brian grew up, like, I remember my first day at Hemet High. So I went to Hemet High my freshman and half of my sophomore year. And I remember going to tryouts. And we had 95 guys at the tryouts. 95 guys. All of them played rec ball. Every single one. I played rec ball. Rich Bryant played rec ball. Like, everyone played rec ball. That was in 2004, 2003. Everyone played rec ball. Like, and it was big rivalries. We had good coaches. And our big thing is, you know, rec ball is dying. We all agree. Rec ball's dying.
Yep.
It's out. It's done. Like, put a fork in it. Like, nobody's gonna have rec ball anymore. But the problem is, all these little teams are sprouting up, right? All these little teams. And what happened is, the only difference is the rec ball coaches are now going for travel ball.
Yep.
Now they're charging 10 times, 20 times, 30 times, 50 times, 100 times the amount as rec ball costed.
Yep. They're just getting rec ball coaching, not anything near of what you guys can offer.
But you see at the trap. Are the kids any better?
Nope.
I don't think so. I really don't think so. They're not any better than what they were 15 years ago.
Nope. You're still going to have that kid that shows up in jeans who is the superstar of the rec ball league. And
of course. Hey, you know what? He shows up on time, though, and he's in a bad hole.
But there is one thing I will say. I'm an advocate for rec ball a little bit. There were actually more kids that tried out when rec ball was hot. Because parents could afford it.
Well, I think my main thing with rec ball is, when I played rec ball, everyone else was playing travel ball. Like, rec ball was your off season. That was, you know, that's where all the rivalries started. So like, half of our travel team was on one team and then half was on the other. So that's where like the real rivalry started. And that caused a big stir down at old Hemet Youth. Because we were dominant, because we played together since we were 11 and 12, and now we've reached our final year of rec ball at 14, 15, and like, everything's come together, so you have these two powerhouses that nobody can beat, you know. So that's pretty much what it came down to, is just like, you guys are too good. Like, what? Why are you playing rec ball and whatever? And it's our off season. It's just, it's reps. It all comes down to just that live game reps.
Nailed it, though. You said reps, it's extra reps. Coaches can never give you
game time reps. I can try as hard as I can to throw to you and throw you curveballs and throw you changeups, throw you two seamers. I can try my best to throw you those pitches, but I can never relate to a game environment. I can never say, hey, here's a runner at third, and those nerves are kicking in because there's no outs, and you want to do that sack fly. Like, I cannot replace that. You're totally right on that. Going a step farther, though, in Southern California right now, that's all I can relate to. I can't talk about Northern California, but Southern California I can totally relate to right now. We do not have a lot of rec ball organizations that are functioning. They're shutting down. But the demand for ball is not stopping. It's America. It's America's pastime. Every ball player from a young age, they all grow up seeing guys on TV smacking balls, and they want to smack balls. And just like me and you, we can totally relate to that. But at the same time, if these rec ball coaches don't have the rec ball environment to work in, some of these guys, I'm not going to say they're not qualified, but at the same time, they're nice guys. They have time. They're going to start things, and they're going to try their best they can, but they've never quite been there. If they've only played at a 13 or 14-year-old level, if they've only played in high school, they don't know, like me and yourself, we've played at a high level. We've been those high school, college, or even farther than that, those big workouts. We understand how to build a program. We understand how to build a player because we're one of those players, a part of a big program. We understand that. Right now, I think we're getting a little diluted. Maybe things are getting a little watered down because there is no rec ball anymore. At the same time, that's fine. As long as the boys are playing and getting their reps, we'll work with them. But moving forward, as far as being competitive, if you really want to really real work, an organization is where you can be.
Yeah, I could not agree with you even more. So let's get to the fun stuff. We'll wrap it up here. You guys, obviously, big baseball fans. So let's get to the fun stuff and then we'll end it. Because we're at the hour and 30 mark. Oh my God. I can't remember the last time I had an hour and 30 mark. This is a little exciting. But MLB picks for this year, given all the trades and everything. You were talking to my dad earlier. Where did Bauer go? Bauer ended up going to. Oh, he's gone. Okay. So then we'll get into that.
I'm hoping he's going to be an angel. Even if he does become an angel,
no.
I'm not going to say the Angels are the team to beat. I'm thrilled that they've worked on their offensive portion of things. But their pitching has some work. They're starting pitching. I'm sorry, but you cannot compete with some of these other teams that have made the adjustments. The Yankees are going out of control right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're starting pitching. They got Severino coming back. No one even talks about Severino. Severino is one of the best pitchers in the league.
Yeah, but he's been hurt for 2 years.
Yeah, I know he's hurt, but he's coming back now. Add him to the rotation at the end of the year.
Corey Kluber.
My goodness. Like,
just signed Corey Kluber.
Yes. And he's not, what was he, a four guy? He's not even number three.
On this staff, he'll probably be – well, we haven't re-signed Paxton, so right now Kluber is two or three.
Oh, so he is three.
I
thought Paxton's still there.
No, if we have to re-sign Paxton. So if we re-sign Paxton, that bumps Kluber to 3-4, and then Tanaka's gone. He's going back to Japan, which kind of sucks. So that, again, moves Paxton up. Paxton's a solid three right now.
Really?
Yep. So Kluber is a solid three right now, depending if we re-sign Paxton or not, or unless we're trying to sign Bauer like we've been trying to do. I thought we were going to sign Bauer before we signed Kluber, but so who's
Bauer going to Dodgers?
All right, so ask your question again.
I was just going to say, who's your guys' teams to beat this year in both leagues? I mean, for me personally, I think National League, I honestly think the Padres are finally going to dethrone the Dodgers, especially with all their signings that they just did.
I think the Padres are definitely on their way. It's going to be some fun matchups, especially if MLB is playing their full season.
They are, but they're also implementing the double headers. So they're going to have they're going to do the 7-inning double headers, which again, that changes everything.
I do not like that.
I don't either. And then they also included the what else is coming back is the extra inning runner on second rule. It makes it more fun. Yeah. Makes it more
California League rule.
California League.
Oh goodness, I hate it. Now, hey, when you're with youth ball, it's a tournament situation. Yeah. I get it. But come on, we're in the professionals. We have numbers that have gone back over 100 years, and those numbers don't reflect to a 7-inning game or a runner at second base.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
I mean, there's
grandfathers instilled, and we'll talk about Babe Ruth back in the day, way back then, they instilled some rules that I believe should be followed. Like, they are the mecca. Everyone talks about Babe Ruth. You realize if Babe Ruth was told, hey, if you swung a smaller bat, you hit more home runs. You know, the whole bat speed thing. If we wind the rules back to the basic day, life might be a little more simpler. We don't need to keep evolving. Why don't we keep evolving a game that's been around for 100 years?
Because the game's not fun anymore to watch, Bryant. You got to give the people what they want. They want more home runs.
Cute cannons with t-shirts. And I've even been to a game.
You got a bat flip and do a somersault down the
front. Oh, no. Bat flips are taboo.
They gave me a free hot dog, and it was awesome. They threw me a free hot dog and it was warm. I was thrilled.
There's a Dodger dog too.
The Dodger dog is a Habsy dog. But guess what? I was thrilled. You know why? Because he even had a packet of ketchup in it.
Well, that's just what MLB is thinking. Rob Manfred wants the game to be more fun and get people back. But you have the purists like us that like to watch the way that it was played. I mean,
can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go for it.
People have been talking about lasers as far as a strike zone. How do you feel about that?
As far as getting rid of the umpire, like robot umpires?
Yeah, go ahead and put a robot in there.
Screw that. I mean, like you talked about earlier, baseball's a game of failure. So umpires are a part of that equation. If they screw up on a call, that's all on them. I mean, Armando Galarraga, I think that's what the pitcher's name was, when he threw the perfect game, and then he got screwed over on the 27th out. That's terrible. The guy was out by 3 steps and got called safe. And then back then, there was no replay. You could not overturn it.
Right.
So like that. So that's another instance where we have to make a rule change. We have to instill the replay. I mean, I'm all here for the replay. Like, because you limit it, just like football. You get one replay, unless if you get it right. If you get it wrong, sorry.
No, I agree.
Anytime else that we screw up, you're done. So I agree with that rule. Like, that one's fair. But as far as robotic umpires, people behind the plate, I mean, that's baseball. You have to adjust to the umpire's zone. I mean, we played NAIA ball. So you probably know as much as I do how screwed up that freaking strike zone is. You're dealing with like former college players that are out there umpiring, or just old guys who are umpiring the high school games. You're not dealing with like professional umpires like the NCAA does, or guys that are trying to umpire their way up to the MLB. You're not dealing with guys who are by the book. So as far as that goes, nah, man.
But I'll tell you this, man. I actually caught, and it was on the MLB Network. I caught the first game with the laser umpire. Caught the first game. Actually, caught the first two games. Actually.
So how weird was that? How weird was that for you? Just like catching a ball and not hearing strike ball.
Yeah, they'd bring a buzzer. It was a strike, and the buzzer wouldn't go off if it was a ball. And man, that strike zone was messed up. It's really messed up.
Oh, but it
really bad.
But it's supposed to be, it's anatomically correct. It's supposed to be knees and chest. It's all supposed to be there.
It's so for example, per the book, for the MLB rules, the strike zone is supposed to be from the front of the plate, from the knees to the letters, I believe.
Yep.
I might be wrong, but I know for sure it's from the front of the plate.
I think Bryant used to go from the shins back when he used to umpire me, but.
Right. You're reading him up there. Man's trying to go home and drink. Anyway, but dude, it was terrible. So I'm a guy that me, when I'm hitting, I stand towards the back of the box.
Same.
I stand towards the back of the box. So
back end corner every time.
Yeah, back end corner. My front foot's lined up with that corner. I'm probably 6 to 8 inches or whatever it is from that chalk line.
Yep.
So I got a little bit of room. I got a little more room to work with the velocity side of things with the inside half.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so what I was noticing with the laser strike zone. So when that ball is coming in, it would hit the bottom square of the strike zone at the very front of the plate. Okay. So when it hits my hitting zone and I'm standing at the back of the box, for me, that's about mid shin.
Right. And you're already hearing a buzz probably.
I'm already hitting a buzz.
Yep.
That's not a strike for me. The umpire, if you had a real umpire back there, he wouldn't call that a strike because it's middle of my shins.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Unless if it's Bryant.
Yeah, exactly. He'd bring you up. If you argued, if you look back at him, he tops you out. but on the other side of it, if it was a high curve ball and that thing was at the hitter's chin or whatever, and he was standing kind of at the front of the box,
mm-hmm.
and that thing sucked down and hit that little square.
Yep.
That was a strike.
Ugh.
Yeah, that was a strike. So I think, and I'm not disagreeing with the robo-ump, but we got to be realistic because the umpires call the game based on where the hitter's standing and based on really where the catcher's standing, because the catcher is going to set up where the hitter's standing. He's going to be in relation to the hitter. The hitter's in the back of the box, the catcher's going to be deeper.
Right.
The hitter's in the front of the box, catcher's going to be more closer to the plate. And so I think for the robo-ump to work, they have to have a relation of where the hitter is standing in the box.
Makes sense.
Thoughts on it. And even then, like, you take a good slider, a slider that, you know, would be – is obviously starting in the strike zone, comes across the plate, you know, and it breaks way out. Well, it might be a strike with the normal umpire.
Right.
Strike with the.
Right. You're not going to get that backdoor slider call.
Yeah. So
which is what you're hoping for.
Tip of the plate. Very front tip of the plate. So I think I honestly like the technology, but there's a lot to work on. And for now, until they can perfect it, I think they got to go a regular umpire. Just keep it old school until they can do it right.
I'm going to elaborate what he says. All right. As far as the umpire portion, we've been doing things for over 100 years as far as the game of baseball. And we have records based on over 100 years of an actual umpire being back there.
Human error.
Yeah, making actual calls. And hitters have to adapt to those umpires.
Mm-hmm.
This has been based off of something well before me and you. All right. I personally believe we should keep the game the way it is because that personal effect, whether it's a strike or a ball, actually has a big outcome in the whole realm of things, whether that guy is a 2,000 hit hitter, things of that nature. I'd love to keep the game with tradition. I'm a tradition guy.
I built on old traditions. Maybe call me an old soul.
I mean, I'm the same way you are right now. So keep preaching.
Maybe call me an old soul. I am open-minded to technology, but at the same time, how many generations have we gone
with this system?
Setting the standard based off of umpires.
Yep.
Babe Ruth set a standard, and he was all by himself. He was hitting more home runs by himself than more teams, like the whole cumulative team in home runs. He was doing it by himself.
Yep.
Now, if you go a step farther and you have a somewhat technology-related strike zone, I'm not going to say Babe Ruth still won't hit those more home runs than other teams. But at the same time, he set the standard with what we had at that time. Let's keep that same tradition. Let's keep that same time moving forward with all of our boys, because he ultimately is the salt in the swat.
Yep.
He set all the standards for us. Why do we need to change all these standards based off of the very, very beginning? I'm an old soul, I guess you can call it.
No, I completely agree with you with everything. I mean, Ricky made some good points too of why technology is so good, but it obviously needs some work. We're running out of time here, so I'm just going to wrap this up here. I got one last segment that I want to do with you guys. Real quick, we've all played at an upper level of ball, whether that's college, independent ball, pro ball. So I just want to go around and just share, like, our favorite memory of playing at our highest level and what these, you know, kids can either look forward to, whether it's like a camaraderie story or just like one of your best moments. I'll go ahead and start it out here. So when I got recruited to play for Valley City, I had two people who were my mentors that were showing me around campus. One of them was the captain of the team, and the other one was the catcher of the team. Me and the catcher hit it off. We got close, and then he's the reason why I came to the school, because how he took me over and won me over, whatever, you know. He gave me the here's why you should come here speech. He ended up in a river accident like 2 weeks before playoffs started. He passed away, and like that whole 2 weeks before playoffs started, you know, everyone's miserable, everyone's depressed, and we're hanging all out at the baseball college house. We were basically drinking our sorrows away, sharing stories, had a funeral for him. Like, all the other teams in our conference showed up. It was awesome. And playoffs come around, and our dean was just like, you know, you guys don't have to play if you don't want to, like, totally understand if you guys don't want to play. Like, he came to the baseball house and saw how we were. He's just like, you guys don't have to play if you want to. I'll leave it up to you guys. We're like, man, screw you, dude. We're playing. Let's go. Let's hit the freaking field. Hit the field. Game time's 8 o'clock at night. Game doesn't end till 2 a.m. Extra innings win. And yeah, I see you making the faces. Game doesn't end till about like 1 o'clock, 2 a.m. 12-13 inning game, extra innings win, walk off, everything. Everyone's piling up, pointing up to the sky, saying, this is for you, this is for you. I've never experienced anything else like that in my life. I've had my fair share of walk offs after that since then, but that moment for me, that's where I was just like, I made it, man. I'm a college baseball player. This is what it's all about. Camaraderie. Everyone joining together, everyone pushing to, you know, get the W, especially after an event like that. I mean, it was awesome. I still get chills when I think about it, man. So best moment in your guys' baseball careers.
Well, I'll start with this. I was just Houston. I got drafted out of the NAI. And kind of a long shot. And as best I tell, through the Houston Astros organization, I was with my Bryant. Every morning we go up the mountain, run, we work out, we come home, we use chicken eggs. You know, it'd work out a couple hours, and a couple of years later, I got released. And, that was tough. Ended up getting signed by an independent team. These guys didn't treat me no different. Like, I was drafted. Most of them weren't from the minor leagues. And I signed with them. We were in a shitty fucking clubhouse. Field sucked. There wasn't no minor league standards. You know, it wasn't a minor league fucking fan base. You know, those guys didn't treat me no different. And that's really what meant the most to me. And that season we dominated. We came back, we were third place in the second half, or the first half, came back to the second half. We won that first half, came back, played the championship. And so we played against the first half winners versus the second half winners. So us versus that other team. We hit a walk off base hit in extra innings. That was a good time. Yeah. Very good time.
I'm gonna go a different little angle with my answer, because some of the best things I ever did playing ball was off the field. Being honest with you, and Ricky just touched on it. I took Ricky with myself. I knew I was going to Colorado, where it's 4,500 feet. I went up to Idlewild, actually past Idlewild, and we went up to Pine Valley.
For those of you that don't know, Idlewild is Mile High, like exactly. So he's getting acclimated. I'll just point that out.
Yeah, go on. Going a step farther, it's above 4,500 feet.
Right.
So there's actually a private road with a bunch of beautiful cabins, beautiful houses, and it was called Devil's Ladder. And as soon as I saw it, I said, you know what? That is my tryout. That is my workout. That is where I need to be. And I actually went up there, and I took Ricky with me. And me and Ricky, we worked out multiple times on Devil's Ladder. And it's just a private road with a bunch of private cabins, but you're above 4,500 feet. I believe it's about 5,000 feet, somewhere in there.
Right, and it shoots straight up, right? Or what is it?
It was definitely a little bit more than a 12% incline, that's for sure. It was probably pushing 15, which is a very, very proper amount to learn how to sprint, eat that forward lean. And you're working hard the entire time because now your body is its own resistance. So I was using that on a regular basis when I was preparing for pro ball or tryouts. It wasn't so much the workout, what I remember. It was the drive going up. And I didn't just go with Ricky. I went with multiple ball players. It was the drive up there because we knew we were going to something big, but we knew that we were preparing for something big. We were driving 45 minutes, maybe an hour, just for a workout. And those conversations in those cars on the way up, that made me remember the most at the end of my career, to be honest with you. At the end of my career, I remember I had people around me that were just as focused and just as determined as I was. That we were going, driving up a massive hill to push our lungs, to push our bodies to a different level that other people weren't, just so we'd have an advantage. But at the same time, as soon as we were done, we were exhausted. But on the way down, we were laughing and giggling all the way down, knowing that we were doing things that other guys weren't, and knowing that we were going to be better than them when we saw them in a month.
Right.
Literally what we did, and I'm not exaggerating, I'm not lying, Ricky was with me the entire way. He was there. He was a part of that crew that went up to that 5,000 feet, that 4,500 feet club. the Devil's Ladder, we had two trails. We had a fun one that was a little bit of a hike, and then the other one, just Devil's Ladder. Just get it over with, just sprint up the hill. All right, so Devil's Ladder was a mean day. The other one, it had some highs and lows, had some highs and lows. But you know what? We built ourselves up to a spot that no one could ever say that they outworked us. And that's the truth. We always outworked every single person we took their job. When we took a job as a ball player, it's because we outworked them. That's it. There wasn't anything fancy about it. It's just, I outworked you. Dude. We both wanted to be starting second basements. We both wanted to be starting center fielders. I started multiple positions. I won Utility Player of the Year award in college. It's not because I just sat around. I outworked the other guys, and Ricky is a test of that. He was with me every step of the way. We started working out together at a very young age. Why do I think that this organization should be successful? Because I know what he's been through. I know what I've been through. You know what we've been through because you've been through the same exact thing. Yep. And that's why we're successful. We pushed our bodies to the max. You remember when you went to Ramona Hill?
Oh, God, I hated Ramona Hill so much. For those of you that don't know, Ramona Hill, it's this outdoor theater, and the parking lot is literally straight up, straight down. You're pretty much parking on a ledge. And Bryant would make us sprint up the steps and sometimes just the pavement by itself. And it was the worst leg workout you could ever imagine. And Bryant would yell at us and be like, keep moving, no brakes. You got to get to the top.
I never made you do anything. That, I never did myself.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's why you knew that we could do it.
I asked you boys. I never asked anything of you boys that I never did myself.
Yep. And that's successful. And that's all that you can ask for with your program. We're literally like really low on time. I loved having you guys on. This has been awesome. I hope to have you guys on later on when, you know, baseball season starts, you guys get some games going. Where can people find you guys? Social media wise or just anywhere in general?
Go ahead and find us at Golden State Baseball. Go ahead and like us on Facebook, follow us on Facebook. Golden State Baseball is going to be a name you can hear a lot of. Obviously, you're on the East Coast, but you're already hearing it. That makes me thrilled. If we can go ahead and do Golden State Baseball, if you can follow us on Facebook, and we all go a step farther and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, things of that nature.
What's the handles? Is it still just Golden State Baseball on Instagram and Twitter?
It's GLDNST-Baseball.
That's on Instagram?
_ baseball.
That's on Instagram or Twitter?
Instagram.
So Instagram is GLD_baseball, right?
GLND_baseball.
All right. GLND_baseball. That's on Instagram. What's your Twitter handle? You guys are on Twitter. I didn't know that.
Yeah, same handle.
Same thing. So GLDST_baseball. That's where you guys can find these guys on Instagram and Twitter. Facebook is just Golden State Baseball.
I'm sorry. It's GLDNST. GLDNST. _baseball.
GLDNST_baseball. If you're trying to find them on Instagram and Twitter, Facebook, it's just Golden State Baseball. I promise you guys, if you're in the Southern California area, these are the guys that you want to trust your kids with. It's the same philosophy that I grew up with as a kid. It's the same philosophy that they grew up as a kid. You cannot ask for a better group of coaches. I know that these guys will take care of your kids, and they will move them on to the next level. That 90% moving on to the next level, that is no joke. That is proven facts based on this philosophy. Seriously, guys, I loved having you guys on. This has been really freaking awesome, especially since I idolize you guys so much as my older brothers. Seriously, I really do. I'm your host, Tony, here with Outfield Talk. Good night, everybody.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for having us. Hey, thanks for having us, buddy.
Of course, man. Anytime.